Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast brought to you by Seacom. I'm with Grant Parker, GM for Seacom Business South Africa, this morning to talk about the topic smoke and mirrors in the South African internet market. Grant, thanks for taking your time and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Duncan. Good to see you again. Always good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. So I was actually thinking about this last week, about how dramatically the internet landscape has changed in South Africa in the last 10 years. You know, here in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg and Cape Town and Durban, I think we're quite spoilt now with the plethora of options available to us. We have fiber to the home, high-speed internet, and one forgets quite quickly how bad the situation was just a decade ago. And I think that in many respects, Seacom really played a very big role in triggering a revolution in the telecommunications market in South Africa, opening up the market to much greater competition and allowing ISPs to bring down the cost of bandwidth quite dramatically. I thought it would be a good place to start this podcast by maybe asking you how you've seen the market evolve over the past decade and the role that you think Seacom helped play in that.
Well, thank you, Duncan. Certainly, Seacom came into the market and certainly was quite a disruptor, in a very good way. You know, essentially the payoff line was bringing the internet to Africa, plugging into not only South Africa but a number of other African countries along our eastern coast. At the end of the day, all those years ago, there was really maybe one choice, it was quite a monopolistic environment. So certainly we came in to disrupt, and I think we did that. The way the business has really evolved is, you know, we saw that we would maybe come in, the service providers would buy this bandwidth from us, and that would kind of be it. Over time, we've realized that those revenues are sitting pretty flat, and we needed to diversify our business a bit. Essentially, that's when I joined Seacom about exactly almost 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I just got my five-year certificate, actually, last week. And really what we want to do is once again come in and disrupt the market again, but this time where it got down to the actual end user, or what you would like to call the consumer in a sense. Not, when I say consumer, I don't mean house consumers, I mean business consumers. So we felt that although we had brought this disruption in all these years ago, that there was another need for the next revolution, let's say. So we kicked off our foray into the business market, and we were told by our shareholders, our main shareholders, Remgro, if we could sell certain amount of these services in a certain amount of time, you know, let's look at this and let's start putting some serious money behind this and planning behind this. We did that, and I think really that was about 5 years ago now. Seacom Business has only really been running for about 4 years. The first year was really more of an incubation phase and really understanding what it was we were doing and where we were going with it. Where it stands now, and I think what we've brought to the market now, is we've created a kind of quality in a commoditized space. So there is value in what we sell and what we're seeing that our customers are experiencing. And I think that's really where the biggest differentiator is about what we offer today. And really when I say that is it's completely uncontended. There's no shaping. There's no restrictions. We really want people to experience that digital world right down to the end user, because that's really where the rubber hits the road, is how those people experience what it is in their digital life that they're doing every day, albeit from a personal or a business perspective.
So I know that Seacom Business and Seacom have played quite a consolidation role in the market as well. You've made a number of acquisitions over the years to bolster your Seacom Business segment. Tell us a bit about those.
Yeah, I think really the acquisitions that we've made over the last couple of years, there's been a couple of small ones, and then more recently a much larger one. There are some other things in the pipeline that, you know, I'm not at liberty really to speak about at this stage, but at the end of the day, I think what could or would happen eventually is that we certainly are seeing consolidation across the industry, across multiple industries actually at the moment. If you look at just what's happening globally from an economic situation. And at the end of the day, we will continue to see what makes sense for us. Really, the more on-net you have, the better it is for you as a business from being profitable potentially. I think really what's happening out there as well is you'll see, being profitable is not so easy nowadays.
It's a tough market. We were talking about that just before we started the podcast.
Yeah.
There are a lot of ISPs in the market. Do you expect that consolidation to continue? Has it become almost a prerequisite, given the market conditions, that there be some sort of consolidation to maybe, I'm not going to say make the market less competitive, but maybe to make it more sustainable?
I think certainly it's making it more sustainable. There'll always be space for the smaller, more niche kind of offerings, and these may be the partners that we work with in Luxor. There may be a specialized in a managed service provider space for managed security, leading with those kind of things, and then we just act as a lever for them. But at the end of the day, I would imagine some of the bigger or even more mid-sized companies, you're going to see some consolidation there. The model has changed in terms of how you service these markets, how they procure from you, how you resource your organization from an SG&A perspective to accommodate those certain segments, let's call them. And for lack of, for easy way of explaining, you have your SMEs, you have your mid-markets, you have, let's call it, your corporate markets, then you would have maybe what you call your aggregators, which would be maybe a tier two or tier three providers, and then we've got what we call resellers. So that's kind of how we've segmented the markets and how we're looking at it. But for each of those areas, there's different touch points in your business, different ways that you interact with them, and what we call a customer journey. So we're very much going through our customer journeys now and what it needs to look like from a digital perspective, right up to our low, so from our low touch online, which we there's some imminency around that, so some excitement there for us, right up to your high touch kind of complex bespoke solutions for customers that require a lot of resources within the company to be involved, and it's really a longer sales cycle and a longer term partnership.
Does Ecom keep moving up that stack? Does it become more of an ICT solutions provider over time?
Absolutely. So really where we're heading to now, where we need to be, is I've always said from a Ecom business perspective, we always want to meet the basic needs of customers as the basis of anything. Mm-hmm. Be easy to do business with, and I suppose last to be fun to do business with. But the basic needs of these customers is moving. It depends on certain verticals as well. Within those segments. So let's say in the corporate segment, you've got the mining vertical, you've got the finance vertical. They have very different needs. They have different competencies in terms of their own internal IT solutioning. To answer your question, absolutely. We want to go into a customer and really be the trusted advisor in terms of their digital world and how we journey them essentially to the cloud. That cloud could be a hybrid model, half on-site, half off-site, public, private. There's many variations there. But I think at the end of the day, cloud's here to stay. It's been here since the beginning, actually, if you really think about it. And really, that's where we want to move up the stack. So all the components that are involved there are basically your device on-site, the connectivity into your sites, plus the resiliency on that connectivity, plus how do we secure your network from that big, bad world out there. I mean, security is a huge threat for organizations at the moment, and, they can put people out of business. How do we then host your applications on what platform? We have a platform as a service. How do you consume your cloud? Is that involving, some international connectivity? Do you use 0365? So it's more of a consultative, holistic understanding of the customer and to see how and where we can add value at the end of the day. But certainly we want to focus on those customers, and those customers, those bigger customers, probably would be more of a direct approach from our side. And then we do have our reseller side of the business. There's some exciting things happening there too at the moment. That's really where we're going to create scale in our business and where we may be launching some more entry-level products into the market now. So to meet that lower ARPU entry-level price point, which I think is going to push quite a lot of volume through our partners. And they're very excited about it. And I think the good thing is that they're excited about it because they've had a good experience with Ecom thus far, and our stuff works. It's good quality, and sometimes we say we don't want to be the cheapest, and we certainly won't ever be the cheapest. But we're not going to have those smoke and mirrors and promise you this and promise you that and tell you you're getting this, and when actually all we're doing is really confusing people with. With words that mean nothing.
So just to understand it, large corporate clients, you tend to go direct, SME market channel.
Correct, yes. So that would be the preferred approach. I think we've picked up a number of SME customers along the way just building this business, and then that's fine and great. But over time, I think, you know, you need to get into a point where, you know, if an SME is going to be buying from us, that's going to be a lot more of them. That's fine. But if you're going to do that, then maybe we'll allow you to do that through a different mechanism like online.
Right.
Where you know, you tick these boxes, you choose what it is you need. So it's almost we're going to head into what we call a guided selling age, where really, you know, someone could come, owns a business, got so many users, can actually be asked some questions online, and a solution's put together for them. So that's really hopefully where that will go to. And then whilst that is all happening, we are focusing more on the kind of mid to the upper corporate side.
On that, out of interest, on that online channel side of things, could you potentially look at targeting home residential market at some point in the future?
You know, these are discussions that are kind of thrown about. I think let's, you know, just take each natural progressive step, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
So before we get right down to the consumer level, but absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, We want everyone to experience that quality bandwidth and that quality digital life. And I mean, home users use the cloud all the time. I mean, they're connected. Their life is there.
Yeah.
I mean, their entertainment is there. The Netflix, the this, the that, the YouTube. I mean, it's just amazing. Really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're home or at work. You need to be connected 100%.
Mm. Or in between.
Or in between, too. Well, you shouldn't be using your cell phone though while you drive.
No, that's true. So Grant, you recently wrote quite an interesting column on I think it was titled "The Smoke and Mirrors of South Africa's Internet Industry." What do you mean by that? What are you getting at in that piece?
Well, there's two parts to it. So I think the first part is really just, you know, part of what we want to do in the market and generally this year is just educate the market as to really how things fit together and where people fit into the greater schemes of things. So, I mean, I always joke that, you know, you get your tier one providers. You know, I always look at CECOM as the tier zero. And, you know, you spoke about when we came into the market 10 years ago and when we re-disrupted now, we caused some tears in those tiers, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And, so the smoke and mirrors really is how everything works, how we educate the market in terms of where people fit in and what it is they're actually getting at the end of the day. The smoke and mirrors would also pertain to really what I like to more around the marketing side and the let's say cleverness or the amount of information that they put forward to the people that are buying these services and what they're getting. And really at the end of the day, typically speaking, you wouldn't be getting that. So I think it's a bit of both. It's a bit of people understanding and being educated about what it is they're getting, and then secondly, being prudent when going through and choosing a provider, how they do that and the type of questions they ask. So some of those questions would need to be, what are your acceptable usage policies? Are there any restrictions? A number of things just regarding the international component potentially, how that works on their specific solution. I think at the end of the day, a lot of bandwidth anyway is getting dropped off at NAP nowadays, so that's all getting offloaded locally. We're seeing a lot of that, which actually is good for us. It clears our international side as well. I mean, we've got a lot of bandwidth there and a lot of application for certain customers in certain segments, but what you get from CECOM is what you pay for is what you get. You know, there's absolutely none of this in between and overutilization and things like that that we put into the network.
I suppose if you see a service provider offering a 100 megabit per second connection, for example, and you see another service provider offering a 100 megabit per second connection and the price is quite radically different, you think, well, they're both 100 megabits per second, how can the price be so different? But actually there's so many factors underneath that affect that price and affect the service that you're ultimately going to get.
It certainly does affect the price and the service. There's a number of things. You need to also make sure the company that you're dealing with is quite reputable. You know, check them out. Look at things like Hello Pizza and places like that, because this is a lot of the places where these people come and, you know, let off the steam where they're experiencing these things. So the important thing is just do your research and don't be overwhelmed by the myriad of choices you think are out there. Just, you know, understand what it is that you need for your business, how many users you have. You need to be scientific about it in a certain aspect too. You know, you've got to match up your user count with the bandwidth. You've got to match up, you know, where your application sits to how resilient you make that last mile. You know, that's essentially insurance. If your business cannot operate because your ERP system is sitting in the cloud, because your fiber link's down, that's a problem. So I think just be prudent about what it is you want to achieve as a business and how important internet and connectivity is to you, and really the quality of it. A big thing as well that some people really don't even consider until after they've signed is, and this is where everything happens, and this is where the rubber hits the road, is how they are supported. Is it 24-hour support? You know, how many layers of support? What kind of engineers are you dealing with? These are all the nuances that come into buying services. So you've got to make sure that if your digital world is not working, that you are able to sort that out pretty quickly.
You almost need a checklist of items that you need to tick off and compare.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're moving providers, I mean, who's currently doing your email? Where does your domain name currently point? I mean, there's little things that cause the biggest amount of headaches.
Yeah.
You know, you cut over to a new provider and you haven't repointed your MX records on your DNS and your mail's not working. I mean, imagine your email not working. I mean, most people run their businesses on email.
Yeah.
Email should be an ERP system.
There's a thought. Don't tell SAP. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose if you look at different ISPs, and I think it's probably more true in the consumer market, correct me if I'm wrong, where people are very price sensitive and ISPs tend to tailor packages to get their price down as low as possible. For example, slowing down peer-to-peer traffic or blocking it altogether. Are the shaping rules applied to that sort of that's those sort of low cost packages? Is that also an issue in the business market, or is it less so?
Look, it's not something that's even on our radar, to be honest, or that we normally have any discussions with customers around, apart from the fact that we don't do it.
Yeah,
there's certain people that are quite clever at how they do it, and there are ways you can do it, but it just comes back to, at the end of the day, once again, making sure you are dealing with a reputable company, a good brand. And, you know, it's really hard to say. You know, a lot of guys depend. They may have launched the service in a specific area and it may be amazing the first few weeks. You know, but when the uptake's there and they're having up their backhaul and they're trying to get those efficiencies and you know, that kind of breakage model, and everybody's suddenly on, the experience may not be that good. And I think if you start seeing inconsistent performance, that's the first sign of a problem. That means that your vendor or your chosen supplier may be overutilizing the network. There may be packet loss. So when you start seeing issues like that, then you need to start being worried. So just keep an eye on that.
Well, it's obviously a very cutthroat industry. We were speaking about how many ISPs there are in this country. I mean, that must play a factor in some of these things that we see in the market.
Well, absolutely, and I think, you know, everybody's trying to get a piece of the pie, and you know, I was actually thinking about it yesterday, and it suddenly occurred to me, you know, maybe we are relatively saturated from a fiber perspective. We're saying we're not at all, and it doesn't pass all these buildings, but really what we're seeing out there, there's quite a high density of fiber out there.
Especially in the cities, yeah.
Well, absolutely. Mm. And, you know, look, then everyone says you've got to go out to the outlying regions. Then you look at the challenge of density. And really, what is the market you can serve there? And you know, what is the cost to serve that market? And you know, at the end of the day, is it really worth it? I mean, right down to, and we're seeing a lot of it with some of our customers and whatever. I mean, right down to, at the end of the day, if you're also offering these prices out there, and some of our competitors, you know, people have gone to and got these ridiculous pricing deals, and some of them have come back because it's not really what they said it would be. But you also got to think about the fact that keeping a profitable business and staying in business is just challenging enough nowadays. You know, if you're going out there and giving stuff away for free and trying to win market share, and you're losing money, you're not going to be around for very long. So we are seeing a number of smaller guys, and we're seeing a lot in the SME space. I mean, I don't know how many SMEs are popping up and dropping out every month, but it's quite high, I would imagine, the dropout at the moment. So it's just general economic conditions. You know, there's no such thing as a too good to be true deal. If it looks too good to be true, it's too good to be true. Yeah.
It's long been said that the telecommunications industry, the internet market, is deflationary and that prices come down year after year after year. Is that still the case? Are we still in a deflationary environment?
Absolutely. We're in a price war at the moment.
Yeah.
We're certainly, where is the bottom? I think at the end of the day, we're even seeing some behaviors out there where some partners are not even taking their rebates from their providers and rather just taking it at cost and then selling the ancillary services above that to their customers.
Wow.
So, I think really the critical thing to survive and to be around and to continue to be around is, as I said, meet those basic needs of customers, and be it in what segment, we've agreed that now, and be easy to do business with. The easy part is really where the most important thing comes in.
Automation.
It's automation. It's immediacy. So if you want something, you want it now. And I mean, that's very much the world we live in, this VUCA world or whatever you want to call it. Mm. Everyone's got a different name for it every day. But at the end of the day, it's about that immediacy, being able to get it when you want it, order it online. And I think, cheap is, short lead times are the new cheap. Let's put it that way. So what we're finding a lot of as well, and seeing some quite cowboyish behaviors out there, even from some large organizations that are quite governed, where they would almost place orders with 5 providers. We've had instances now with a customer, they want to put 14 sites of their network. They placed the order with 5 providers, and as the providers came in, they just cancelled with the other providers. So they've got different providers. They're putting down SD-WAN equipment. But, I mean, how do you sign contracts with people and go through all of these things and make all that effort just to get it in sooner, if you know what I'm saying? So we're seeing a lot of that behavior out there where people are promising the world on delivery. Generally, 80% of the time they're not delivering on those times, but already then you're kind of stuck there.
Yeah.
Whereas we're rather going in and we'd rather tell you the good, honest truth. It's going to take a long time. Naturally, we want to push that to on-net where we can instantly, get someone billing. Because, at the end of the day, you're on your customer if you're set up and you're billed and you've paid us.
What sort of conversations are you having with big corporates when you go and talk to them? Is it what's top of their priority list? Is it pricing or is it something else?
Yeah, so it's top of everybody's priority list is pricing. The KPI'd around reducing costs, say it really would depend on a myriad of different things. Some customers that we're talking to now, some of them have actually just had enough of their current providers because their current providers have just, they're falling over themselves. There is absolutely no customer experience. There's no accountability. There's no, that feeling of like, we're safe. So we're seeing a lot of that at the moment. We're seeing a lot of people trying to realign their pricing in the market. So they're just looking not even to move, but they're just trying to get a price to put pressure on their current provider. And what we're finding is, 9 times out of 10, the current provider would just do anything to keep that business, and they're realigning their pricing. Hence, the pricing also dropping in the market. Mm. So I think at the end of the day, there's got to be a bottom end of the pricing. But really what we've realized is, we want to give you that good service that we can live with you going forward in terms of your digital world, or be that from a business or potentially at some stage a consumer perspective.
Hmm. Grant Parker is GM for Secom Business South Africa. It's a great discussion. Good to see you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Duncan.